Kvod HaRav, distinguished Rabbanim, ladies and gentlemen, it's really a very special honor and privilege for me to be here this evening to share some moments with you, Le'ilui Nishmas, Rav Moshe Yitzchok, Ben Avram Aryeh, Zichrono Livracha. Especially since I had the pleasure and the privilege to have him as a Talmid, as a good friend, and someone who was always had a tremendous bikush ha'emes, looking for the truth. He was always questioning, always asking questions, trying to understand and guide his life in all his activities, whether they're communal activities within his mishpacha and in his business life, everything to do it the right way, al pi halacha. And indeed, he pushed this idea of chayshe mishpat being an important thing. It's, you know, most of the world, or certainly in this country, or where there is a uniform commercial code, there's British common law, there are all kinds of rules as to how business is done. Halachically, there can be tremendous differences between what the world accepts and what is halachically correct. And it's important for us to be aware of what the issues are. That you can't assume that because this is what's done, that that is the proper way to do it. Halacha, and especially in Chayshe Mishpat, very many areas of regular business activity are impacted by the dinim of Chayshe Mishpat. And indeed also in one chelik of Yeredeya, because Hilchus Ribis, the laws of usury, are in Yeredeya, not in Chayshe Mishpat, and they have enormous impact on how business is conducted. And because Moshe was so interested in bringing this to people's understanding, even during his lifetime, and now it continues through the Chayshe Mishpat Chabura and other things, even Achar Maisai, it's a wonderful schus to be able to participate in such a thing and to bring to your attention some of the very interesting issues that Chayshe Mishpat brings to bear on our lives. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, I believe it's in Siman Reish Chof Ches, that the Isser of Geneva's Das, the Isser of misrepresenting things, not only applies to Jews, it applies to dealing with Goyim as well. The Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, if you're selling something and that object has a problem, you are obligated to tell the buyer what the problem is. You can't sell it and say, let him inspect it and see if he can figure it out. You have to tell him what the problem is. And there's a very interesting story that illustrates this. It's a story of Kiddush Hashem, and it has, unfortunately, a dark side to it as well. There was a Jew who bought a property, and I guess he did some level of inspection, but for some reason or other, I don't think he did it well enough. He bought this property, I believe it was a big apartment house that he was going to condo, and you know, was going to, he paid a certain amount of money for it, and whatever renovations were had to be made was figured into what the cost of this operation would be, and then he would sell it or condo it, and was about to make a substantial amount of money. Until he discovered, or when they started doing some of the renovations, they discovered that there was a serious problem in the foundation of the building. And that if he would go to the expense of fixing this, the foundation of the building, then all his profit, and he wouldn't make any money on the deal, probably lose money on the deal. So what do you do in this case? You put it up for sale. They put it up for sale. And a non-Jewish person came and offered him $750,000 more than he paid for the building. He offered him $750,000 more than he paid for this building himself. And I hand some profit. He happened to go to a shir shortly after the sale, before the closing, and the one who gave the shir discussed this issue, that if the halacha is that even, doesn't matter, a yid, not a yid, there's a problem with what you're selling, you have to tell the buyer what the problem is. Otherwise, it's gneivas das. And by the way, Rav Rishonim, there's one sheet that holds it's a din derabbanan, but Rav Rishonim hold that it's a deraisa. There's a pasuk in Kedoshim, lo tignoivu, v'lo sechachashu, v'lo sechakru ish ba'amisoi. It says, lo tignoivu, in the plural. And Chazal learned out of that that it means even from non-Jews. Even though the end it says ish ba'amisoi, and that's normally for Yidden, but the Rishonim speak out, under lo tignoivu is an asnachta, which means that that's a break in the pasuk. It's a comma or a semicolon even, which means that that's separate from the rest of the pasuk, and this is an iser deraisa. It's a form of geneva if you don't tell the buyer what the problem is. In British common law, we know there's caveat emptor, that the buyer beware. You don't have to tell that. There's no law in the Uniform Commercial Code, there's nowhere in American law that the seller is obligated to go and tell the buyer what the problem is. You have a right, you buy a building, pay for an inspection, and go see if you find any difficulties. But I don't have to tell you, according to American law, I don't have to tell you what the problem with the building is. So he is the shear from his rav, and he knows he's got this problem. So he came to the rav and he said, "Well, what if I got to get out of this building, and I'm going to come with a profit. I'll give half of the money to tzedakah. I'll do something good with this money that I'm making, you know." So the rav tells him, "Listen, you're an honest and erlich yid, yeah." It says, we believe Mazainoisav Shal Adam, the earnings that a person makes is Ksuvim Laime Rosh Hashanah. In the din of Rosh Hashanah, it's decided what you're going to make. If you believe that, and you get this profit not according to halacha, the Rabbanu Shalom will take it away from you somewhere else. You can't play games with the good Lord, he's in charge. And if alpi the halacha, you don't have a right to this $750,000 profit, because if you tell him what the problem is, and he knows about the problem, he'll of course back out of the deal, and you'll be stuck with it. So if you're really an erlich yid who believes that the Rabbeinu Shlomo is in charge, you can't play games. You have to tell him. Being an Erlich Jew, he came to the closing and had a written paper delineating exactly what the problem was, where it is, and what the possible cost might be in order to fix it. And he said to the buyer, along with his lawyer, he said, "You know, according to law, I don't have to tell you this, but my religion obligates me to give you this paper delineating what the problem with this property is." His lawyer leans over to him, to the buyer, and he says to him, "He got a better price from somebody else, and he's Jewing you by telling you that there's a problem with the building so that you'll back out so that he can make more money." That's the downside of that story, that this is what this guy's lawyer told him. And this is a true story that happened. I heard it from one of the people who were involved. So the sale went through, and he made the profit. 6 weeks later, the buyer comes to him, and he says, "I owe you an apology. What you did was right. My lawyer misled me, and I'm stuck with the problem. But I appreciate and I honor your honesty that you came forth and told us what it was, and we just made a stupid mistake by not believing you." So the outcome, of course, was he got his profit, and there was a Kiddush Hashem. But obviously, the underside of this is also something important for us to realize and bemoan. That unfortunately we have a reputation. Right? He didn't have to give it. I mean, I don't know if he did that or not. He did halachically what he was supposed to do. The guy buys it anyway, he's entitled to that profit. Then it becomes totally legitimate, because he did what the halacha stated he should do. There was no Genevas Das. There was no misrepresentation. He told it exactly like it was. The fact that this person chose to make that kind of a terrible decision is really, you know, it was to his benefit. So you see, this is the kind of an issue that we have to be aware of. American law says, buyer beware. It's not the seller's obligation to point out the difficulties or problems that there might be with the object being sold. But halacha says that you have to. And that's the way we have to conduct ourselves. You can't hide behind, "Sorry, this is I'm doing what the law of the country says, and I'm not mechuyev to do otherwise." Shulchan Aruch says differently. Let me give you another example of an interesting of something that happens on a daily basis. Well, not daily, but very, very often. A man has a business in a building. He owns a business, and he has a nice building where his offices are. And for the needs of his business, there's a big need for capital at the moment. So what he'll do is, he'll put his office up for sale and lease it back from the buyer. But he'll also put in to the sale agreement the ability of first refusal, that should the buyer wish to sell the property, he has a right to buy it back before he sells it to anybody else. This happens all the time. This is because that's a way, if you're running a business and you happen to have certain capital needs, it may pay for you to sell your property, lease it back, And when you have the additional profits, of course, from whatever that investment went into, of the money that you got from the sale of the property, so you'll buy the property back. If the person that you're doing this with happens to be a yid, you've got a big problem. It's a din in Shulchan Aruch that such a deal really isn't considered a sale and a buyback, but it's considered you borrowed that money and the rent that you paid for the entire time until you bought it back is interest and has the din of ribis, and it's usher to do with a Jew. You can write a heter iska. There's a way to get around it. There's a way to structure it. But just because it looks like a sale, the Shulchan Aruch says very clearly in such a case, exactly this kind of a case, when you buy back the property that you owned and sold and were paying rent for it, that rent is considered, the whole thing is considered really a loan, and the money that you paid for rent is considered interest. Another issue. I once gave a chabura in the yeshiva on these kind of issues, and I talked about the following thing. Person is in the construction business or remodeling business. It doesn't matter if he puts in kitchens or, you know, a builder. Well, so, you know, someone's making an addition to his house or remodeling the kitchen or whatever they're doing. And, of course, there's a contract and the price is so much and so much money for the work being done. And of course, the idea is that the one who is having his house remodeled, of course, is expected to pay the, you know, along the way, you know, however they work it out, you pay, there's requisitions, and you pay as the project moves along. And when the project is finished, so you have to finish paying the total amount of whatever the cost of the project was. Well, it comes near the end of the project when the one who owns the house, he doesn't really have the money right now. He wants to pay it out over a period of time. Well, and the buyer, I mean, and the one who did the work, the contractor, says, okay, fine, but I want a certain amount of percentage per month, as you're not going to pay me for another 6 months or a year. Well, the price is going to go up from what the original contract was. That's ribis. It's not necessarily ribis ketzutza because it came later after the work was finished. So I pose this as a problem to the boys. How do you deal with this kind of an issue? So one of the boys says, well, my father does this all the time. So I told him, you have a very easy way out of this. There's a din in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say you rent a house to somebody, and the charge is, I'll rent it to you for $10,000 a year, if you pay up front, or if you want to pay monthly, I'll rent it to you as $1,000 a month. It's mutter. It's not ribis. Why? Because the halacha is ein l'schiras ela l'besayf. When you rent something, the value of the rental only becomes obligatory to you at the end of the period of the rental. And therefore, you can give somebody a discount if he wants to pay up front and you'll take $10,000 instead of $12,000. But it's not rebus, it's not considered a loan for which he's paying the extra $2,000, because since the rental agreement was $1,000 a month, that charge only comes into being at the end of the period of time. The Shach says on that halacha, it's not only on rental, it's on any work that you do for someone to fix a house or any kind of work that you did for him. Ein l'schiras ela l'besoif means that the money only comes due. It doesn't come due. It only comes due when everything is finished. So I said to him, you have a very easy way to deal with this. Somebody doesn't have the money to pay when you're finished the job. Leave something over that you didn't finish. It can be a minor thing. Even if it, let's say, it's, you know, there's some molding that you have to still put on, or there's some other embellishments, maybe some of the painting. Leave over something that the job is not finished yet. And therefore, whatever you're going to charge until the time that it gets finished, that's part of the schiras, that's aimless schiras, ela lebesov, and it doesn't come into the question of rebus. And this brings up a very interesting point, because a lot of the issues in Chosh and Mishpat, and especially in Hilchus Rebus, that really depends on how something is structured. When it became evident several hundred years ago, especially because Jews were very, very much regulated as to what things they could do. Parnassa was a very, very difficult issue. They weren't allowed to do many kinds of things. Unless, of course, you paid under the table for the rights, or you bribed somebody, but whatever. So it happened that money lending became an issue. The Chachamim came up with this idea of a heter iska. What happens is you structure the loan not as a loan, but you structure the loan as a partnership. And even if it's a mortgage, it means you now become, the lender now becomes a partner in the home. And he's a full partner. The way it's structured in Rebus is that you are buying, you're becoming a partner with him in the place that's being mortgaged. But there's a side deal that you are guaranteed a certain amount of profit from this venture that you became a partner in. And until the partnership is bought out, so a certain amount, of course, the way it's structured, you pay a certain amount of money every month, and you know, it's amortized over the 30 years, and as it goes along, more is capital and less is interest. I mean, that's the way it looks on paper. But what really it is that he's buying back the mortgagee is buying back the property from the lender, and he's also guaranteeing him a certain amount of profit from the investment that money that this property is generating now for the two partners, but that one partner is promising the other partner or guaranteeing him a certain amount of profit. That's the way the structure of Heter Iska works. I asked a good friend of mine who is a very good lawyer, an outstanding lawyer who understands business very well. I said, you know, I don't know if the IRS ever would find this out. But the truth of the matter is, under the, let's say this mortgagee didn't pay his property taxes. According to the structure of Heter Iska, the state or the federal government could go after the partner, after the lender, for the tax liabilities of the, for the tax liabilities of the owner of the property, because he's a partner. They may not know it, you know, but the fact is that that's, it's real. Now, it has to be real, because otherwise it's an Isser Deraisa. And the Isser Deraisa of Ribis is not only on the borrower and the lender, it even goes on the lawyer who writes the deal. If you're in the mortgage business and you're arranging loans, if it's between, I mean, banks, of course, there aren't too many Jewish banks. There are some Jewish banks around, and they do, the Jewish banks that are have some kind of a religious nature, do write the Heter Iska on every one of their loans. Because otherwise, and even to be the lawyer who arranges this, in fact, this very same lawyer told me that there was a case, a very interesting case of an investment with a there was a whole complicated case that he dropped out of, both as a lawyer and as an investor, because there was a Ribis problem that came up in the way this deal was structured. And the question is, we know that the way the world runs, the way all businesses run, is of course very much based upon this idea of loans and interest. Why is the Torah so much against it, particularly amongst Yidden? The Torah uses the word ochicha in connection with ribis. Anochi sashich l'ochicha lo sashich. The word ochicha is used very much in the connection with this idea of ribis. And the idea may be that we treat each other as one big family. And in a family, you do a chesed. You don't take ribis. I think there's two things here. Number one, business could happen without lending money. What's the purpose of this idea? You need capital. Well, you know, not everybody wants to be a partner. Not everybody wants to be an investor. Not everybody wants to take a chance. So there are people who will give money to a project, but they don't want to carry the liabilities of it. That's why, that's where this whole idea of lending money for things come from. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants that amongst us, we shouldn't have that kind of an issue where someone is guaranteed his return without sharing risk. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to have shared risk. That's what he really wants. He wants shared risk. And I think that there's a good reason for that too. Because if there's shared risk, it's possible that the zuchuyos, that the merits of those who share in the risk, outweigh the merits that any one individual might have, and that the success of the venture would do much better because of the shared risk than it would do without the shared risk. And because the Torah talks about it in terms of achicha, it talks about it that we should consider ourselves as one family. And when someone does a gemilas chesed to somebody else, He gives him the money so he can start a business and doesn't take interest. The schus of that, for the one who's putting the money in, lending the money interest free, could very well be the schus that makes that business flourish and function. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to allow someone to lose his money because he's giving a chesed. And even if you become a partner with someone, by virtue of the fact that you are enabling that person, as you become an investor in somebody's project, even if that person, you know, in a lot of these syndication deals, the one who's syndicating it will end up with 51% of the profit of the business without having put a penny into it. In other words, the people who invest the money end up owning 49% of the deal, and he owns 51% of the deal for putting it together. So there is an element of chesed involved even when you become an investor, because you're enabling that person to be able to make that deal, make that investment, buy the property, and of course eventually, or develop a property and eventually rent it out, and there's a tremendous stream of income, becomes a very profitable affair to all the investors. There's an element of chesed there even if you're doing it for the profit, because you're giving this person the money and he's getting 51% of the deal for putting it together without putting a penny into the deal, and you all end up with the 49% based on your giving him the money, enabling him to be able to put the deal together. Those zechuyos of shared risk could very well influence the dinei shamayim that make the deal work, and it turns out to be profitable for everybody. Because when we think of our role in the world, as the Rav so eloquently expressed, this understanding of realizing that whatever we have comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Torah wants us to do things in a way that the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of chesed, of doing something for others, this lechuyos that come from the chesed that's involved in it, influence the success of the deal. In last week's parsha, the Torah talks to us about Trumas and Maisris, Aser to Aser, Eis Kol Tvua Zarecha, giving Maiser, Aser to Aser, Maiser Rishon, Maiser Sheni, Maiser Oni. International trade is not something that started in recent years. Go back in Bereishis, and the Torah describes the caravan, the Orchas Yishma'elim, that transported Yosef to Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us they were carrying Nechais Tzri Valoit. They were carrying spices. International business and food has been around as long as the world has been around. It's not something that only happened in recent years. Eretz Yisrael doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's surrounded by a lot of countries that have quite good agriculture as well. Shemitah coming up now. There are all kinds of deals of stuff that's going to come out of Jordan, come out of El Arish, and all. There's all kinds of things that of course, make Shemitah much easier to keep nowadays, because you can get, they can get the from neighboring countries, they can get a lot of the vegetables and fruits and stuff that they need. In fact, there's even a lot of Arab-owned property. I lived in Eretz Yisrael in the Shemitah of Tovshin Lamed Gimel. And all of a sudden, one day in the Shemitah stores, they had these Agrexco packages, that's the Israeli export company. They had these incredibly magnificent strawberries. So I asked the people who were involved in the, you know, in controlling this stuff, where'd that all come from? And I learned that most of this strawberry growers in the Galil are Arabs, are Israeli Arabs, who have these, who grow strawberries. They own the land. It's not a fake mechira, or you know, so like it's not a. That's what they do. And somehow or other, there was a tremendous amount of supply that they couldn't export, so it was being sold in the Shemitah stores. And stuff that year also, the local potato crop didn't work, so they brought in 100 tons of potatoes from Belgium, so potatoes weren't a problem like they were in earlier Shemitahs. It was very, very easy to get. So there has always been international commerce and trade. Listen to what a Jewish farmer has to put up with. He's got to give Truma Gedoila. Truma Gedoila is 2%. Then the next 10% is Maaser Rishon. Then there's another 10%, but of course it's left. So if you give 2% for Truma, and then it's, then you have, so let's say you have 900,000 bushels. So you gave 2% of 1,000 bushels was 20 bushels. So he's got 980 bushels left, and 98 of those have to go to the levy. And then another 80 or something so bushels have to go to Maaser Sheni that you take to Yerushalayim to use, or on the third and sixth year Maaser Ani to give it away. The bottom line is that a Jewish farmer has a cost differential to all the people around Eretz Yisrael of close to 20% of a built-in cost off the top that he's got to give away. And of course that has to affect the price. And if they can bring it in from somewhere else cheaper, what do you think people are going to buy? But the Navi tells us, "Uvachanuni na bazois." Test me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Yes, I am putting you in a hole with an almost 20% price differential on the cost of your doing business. And the Rebbeinu Shloim promises us, "V'harikaisi lachem bracha ad b'li dai." I'll tell you how it can happen. The Rebbeinu Shloim can bench us with incredible yields. Just heard a story this week. A group of bacharim from Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, you know, because they had this abbreviated Beinaz Manim. So someone in the yeshiva arranged for a whole group of guys to go on a tour of the Barkan winery up in the Galil. So they came, the head of the president or someone, one of the leading officials of that company gave them a tour of the winery. And he said, "You know what happened this year? We had this big snowstorm at the end of the winter, and since then there wasn't a lot of rain. But that was just perfect for grapes. Our yields are double this year." And then he says to them, "Guess what? This happens every year before Shemitah." It's Fabulous story. But that's what we have to have the trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That even though the Torah limits us from doing business as everybody else does, but the Rabbeinu Shlom tells us of V'chanuni Nabazais, test me. You can test me on this. And if you do it the right way, you do it al pi halacha. The Rabbeinu Shlom has his ways of how we can be matzliach and how we can flourish and how we can accomplish even in a competitive world where we have extra costs and still are able to be successful. That's what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants from us. And the study of Chosh and Mishpat, of knowing and being aware that there are halachic differences, there are halachas that differ from the prevailing laws of the country and from prevailing business practices. But the Rabbeinu Shalom wants us to do things in a certain way. The Shulchan Aruch delineates for us how to do it. And when we do it, the Rabbeinu Shalom promises us ultimately terrific success and the Kiddush Shem Shemayim that comes out of it. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan, in that particular case of that I talked about at the beginning, he points out that this halacha, you got to tell the buyer what the problem is, and if you do it, he says, Kiddush Hashem will come out of it, and if you don't do it, the Rahman Litzlan, the result could be Chilul Hashem. And that's what we have to be very careful about. We have to conduct ourselves in a way that is Mekadosh Shem Shemayim in everything that we do. And that indeed really, really was represented by Moshe Ezrael in his life and in his business dealings. He was a walking Kiddush Hashem, both in his interactions in the community and in his business transactions as well. And the fact that he pushed this idea of the awareness of Chosh and Mishpat and it's continuing in his memory is a gewaltig zchus for his neshama. Thank you very much for listening.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.